You're listening to Psyched Up, a show where we interview awesome guests in the mental health field in order to demystify therapy. We want you to understand the inner workings of therapy and view therapists in a fresh and humane light.
Hi there, I'm Hanata.
And I'm Chris. Welcome. We also aim for it to be a great resource for other mental health workers that are interested in how their peers work and deal with their own mental health. We hope you enjoy.
I'm Hanata, a psychology grad student. I intern at a hospital and an NGO, and I'm the meme maker for Your Therapy Memes on Instagram. Since I can remember, I have always been pretty observant and fascinated with what goes on in other people's heads. So when I was choosing a career path, I wanted to unite this with my wish to help others, hence psychology. For me, starting this podcast has a lot to do with the same motivation that made me choose my own profession.
Hi, I'm Chris, a therapy advocate and one of the owners of At Your Therapy Memes account. I've been into psychology since I was a teenager, so I've always worked on different projects concerning mental health. From developing an app that connects people to therapists, to creating websites that share resources about psychology and finding meaning. This podcast is one of those projects, an aim to destigmatize therapy and help everyone feel relatable to one another, both therapists and clients alike.
Our guest today is Celine Barron, a young clinical social worker who is passionate about debunking the stigma and humanizing mental health clinicians. She has experience working in foster care, substance abuse counseling, school social work, Medicaid population, medication assistance programs, and being an outpatient therapist for clients ranging from 4 to 60 years old. She's also the owner of the Instagram page at Wait, I'm the Therapist, with over 50,000 followers. As an upcoming social media content creator, she has been able to utilize her personality, humor, and therapeutic background to deliver relatable content to the masses. Hey, Celine, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for coming to Psyched Up. For those who don't know, Celine was one of the indications by Dr. Funnies. So Dr. Funnies was our first and our last guest we had on this show. And she indicated Celine. And I wanted to know a little bit about your relation. How do you two know each other?
So my Dr. Funnies is like my girl. The story, we talked about this before. I started my meme page in about January of 2021. And so the reason of it is I pretty much was like reposting a lot of therapist memes on my personal account. And I was like, I don't think like a lot of people find this as funny as I do, you know, because obviously I don't, you know, on my personal account, I don't clearly have as many therapist friends or whatever. And so I was looking through memes or whatever, just like, Dr. Funnies. And I was like, oh, wow, like, I feel like I could do this. I was like, I'm pretty funny. So I started trying it and I kind of just found accounts like hers. And I was like, oh, well, you know, I feel like, you know, she's like someone who like inspired me. So I kind of just like reached out to her in like DMs. And I think I was just kind of like asking about, you know, like her process. I think I like asked her to like repost one of mine. I was like, can you please help promote me and stuff like that? Cause that's something that does happen a lot in the therapist meme community. Cause obviously we want to support all of each other and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so our friendship kind of grew from that. So we have just like a very purely online friendship. I mean, we actually, her and I text like all the time. And we have talked on the phone a couple times, but yeah, we just kind of like go back and forth all the time and whatever like little things that are happening between our meme accounts, just we've gotten to know each other really well too. So she's just like become like my like Instagram BFF, which is so crazy too, because obviously if I didn't have my Instagram, you know, our meme pages, we would have never known each other because she lives in a completely different state than I do. Yeah. So it's kind of crazy how like you're able to really connect with people through like an Instagram platform. So ever since then, you know, we've just kind of like really clicked and been really supportive of each other. And yeah, she's been a really great friend to have who like purely gets what it's like, you know, doing, you know, our little meme game. So that's been cool. Cause obviously there's not a lot of people that like in my life, there's no one actually in my life who does the same thing as me. So like having kind of like a little bit of a BFF has been really fun. So yeah, that's kind of how it came to be.
Oh, that's so wholesome. Yeah, I really feel that our like
psychology meme page community, and it's a really niche thing on Instagram. It's kind of a tight-knit community. Like, everybody likes each other's posts and comments on each other's posts, and I really like being a part of it. I really feel supported, like, as a meme maker and as a future therapist.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know what? It's so cool that, you know, you are a future therapist and you're being immersed in this community, because I wish I had that when I was in grad school, truly, because, like, I didn't have those same resources. And I mean, I only graduated from my master's program in, like, May of 2019. But even then, there might've been something out there, but, like, not to my knowledge, like, having, like, a community and, you know, people who are just, like, open arms and who are very authentic. And one of the things that I often do on my page is, like, you know, I'll do, like, an ask me a question kind of thing. And I get a lot of different questions and stuff, especially a lot of people, you know, kind of in your situation who are, you know, grad students who are, you know, just, like, starting in the field or thinking about being in the field. And they ask me these questions and I'm able to give them, you know, the kind of, like, the guidance, the, you know, the answers that I know I sure as hell didn't get. And I felt like I would have really benefited from it. So that's something that's cool, because obviously when I started this account, I was just doing it. Literally, I was just doing it for fun. And then it kind of just, like, turned into something, like, a little bit more meaningful by, like, helping, you know, answer other people's questions, you know, getting these, like, beautiful DMs about, you know, people and, like, how much, like, I've been able to help them, or they're, like, you know, in grad school and stuff like that. So that's, like, really cool thing that comes from the psychology therapist meme community too, that, not a lot of people would think of and realize. So that's, like, a really cool thing about social media. I mean, there's always those upside downsides, but that's, like, huge upside of it.
Yeah. This reminds me of, I don't know if your parents said that to you, but, like, don't make friends online. Don't contact them. Don't make video calls. And here we are.
Oh, I know, right? It's so crazy. And it's so funny too, because, like, I work with a lot of teen clients and stuff. So, like, all that, like, Gen Z population, and, like, some of them, like, I feel kind of old. And then I also feel a little hypocritical when they tell me they have, like, their online friends. And I'm just like, are they safe? Like, do you know them? Like, are you giving information? And then I'm over here, like, and I mean, I feel like if anything, a therapist community is, like, very different than other communities, but still, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just really interesting, because same thing. I mean, my parents definitely, like, told me not to make, you know, friends online, and to be, like, very careful about it. But, you know, this is where we're at in the world.
Yeah, exactly. I had a teen client in an NGO that I used to work for on an internship. And then she said to me, oh, because I'm going to travel to another state and I'm going to meet a guy that I met online. And I didn't want to discourage her, but I also didn't want to, I wanted to keep her safe. So, have you checked with your parents? Like, what is he like? Have you talked to him? So it's a really fine line of not being kind of judgy, not giving off this vibe of judginess, but also being, like, chill about it.
It's like, wink if you're not okay. Like, blink twice.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. If I had a client like that, I would be like, have you, you know, checked into his criminal records? Have you, like, stalked his sister's Instagram or Facebook? Like, you know, have you FaceTimed him? Like, you know what I mean? Like, do your friends follow your location? Like, that's the type of therapist I would have been. I'd be like, just make sure you, you know, cross your T's, you know, dot your I's, kind of thing. But that's so funny, that situation.
Exactly. Be safe, because there are situations that things can go super right and it's like, I don't know, the love of their life, but you have to be safe. Like, it's, the internet can be safe if you know what you're looking for, but yeah, with teen clients, you never know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I think, like, I feel as though, like, as, you know, time's going on, teens are starting to be a little bit more aware, especially, like, when I do have conversations with them and I'm like, I don't want to sound old, but you know what I mean? Like, are you being safe with what you do on the internet? You know, are you, like, Snapchatting nudes? You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, stuff stays forever. Like, if I look back, you know, I don't know, how old are you?
I'm 21. So I'm just I'm training this year.
Okay. So, like, did you ever at any time have a Facebook?
Yeah. 4 years.
Okay.
I did.
Okay. So, you know, you're like, you're not like that much younger than me, but I like, I don't know if you ever do this, but I look back on my Facebook, you know, posts and stuff, what I would write and stuff that are still there, you know, things from like, I don't know, like 2010 or like 2009. And I'm looking, I'm like, oh my God, why is this on the internet? Yeah. So like, you know, I think about that with like kid clients too. And they're like way more like mine were just like a bunch of like, remember those statuses that people would write?
Yeah. You know, you go, oh my God. Those stages.
Oh, it's awful. Like I go sometimes like when I really want to self-loathe on myself, you know, I'll look back in the past and I'm like, oh God. But yeah, I definitely think about that with teen clients too. I'm just like, be careful.
Yeah. And me and my friends, we used to have this practice that wasn't not so good practice, that every birthday we posted everything that we had to embarrass the other person, the person that was celebrating their birthday.
Oh.
So I just have like this sash of me and my friends with embarrassing things. And I'm like, I just hope that no company ever looks me up on Facebook.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that's a thing too, that, you know, maybe we can chat about this more offline, but when you're applying for therapy jobs, you got to do like professional ones. You got to do a clean sweep of all your social media stuff and keep that unlocked, because also, you know, this is something too, that's going to like obviously tie into being a therapist, is like keeping confidentiality of yourself and your private life from like your clients and your, you know, obviously like you don't want to get into a situation, you know, when, you know, clients like have full access of your social media and your private life, too. So that's something, you know, you have to be very, very careful about, you know, what is public, what's, you know, private too. And, you know, there's like cases where, you know, I've had clients find my Facebook, which like I actually don't even use my last name. You know, I kind of have like a little bit of like a pseudonym kind of thing that I use, for, you know, my other like personal social media accounts. But somehow one of my clients that was like younger and was no longer my client tried to add me on Facebook, and it was like literally a nightmare. But it's not like, even so, they wouldn't have been able to see really anything on my, my Facebook anyways. Like, you know how like when it's like public or whatever, you know, what you can shoot, like it was the same, it was like totally clean. But that's another thing.
Thank God.
But that's another thing that, you know, they don't tell you in grad school. But it's really, really important with the, like, you know, just how social media is, you know, and you don't know like what a client could find or something like that. So kind of like continuing to preserve that, you know, obviously, you know, we are people too, but you know, there's just things that, you know, clients shouldn't see.
Yeah. And I really feel that there should be a course in college about this, like in grad school somewhere, because it is so important. And sometimes it can like kind of make or break a therapeutic alliance depending on the client. So it's really important that we keep this privacy.
Absolutely. Because unfortunately, like you can do your best to keep boundaries, you know, with your client, but that doesn't mean that they won't try to go outside of the line of those boundaries, and try to, you know, sneak on you or find something, you know. So that's always something to keep in mind too. And even, you know, my profile is, you know, I am fine that people know my name. I know Dr. Funnies is very different about how, you know, she treats her platform, but I mean, even with the things that I do, you know, with my face, you know, on, my meme account, which is very minimal, I'm sure you've seen, like, I have done like my work outfits lately, because people were like, I think I did it like once.
Yeah, they're cute. They're really cute.
Thank you. And now everyone's like, oh my gosh, I want your work outfit. And like, you know, that's like one of those things that like one of my clients saw that I was like, you know, they know that I dress a certain way at work, you know. I keep it a fashion forward, because that's just my brand. So even that, you know, like I think about, okay, like my client, you know, a client, because my meme account is public, you know, a client were able to see that, like, you know, that's something I'm comfortable putting out there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And changing the subject a little, but one of the things that we always want to ask therapists and mental health workers that come here is, how did you get into the mental health field? Like, what were your motivations? How did the journey look like for you?
Yeah. Great question. So my journey was definitely like not like I knew from day one I wanted to be a therapist. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anyone like crawls out of the womb is like, I want to be a therapist. But so I, you know, growing up, I had a lot of just experiences working with people. My parents raised me pretty, like we were really involved in church. So I had a lot of experiences like doing mission trips, you know, like just like Sunday school, all those like very, you know, community helping people. So I was passionate about helping people really from a young age. But it wasn't really until college until I thought I wanted to be a teacher, but, turns out you have to like do math, when you're studying to be a teacher and I'm allergic to math. So that didn't work out, which I'm very happy.
But we still have statistics. We still have statistics. Unfortunately,
wasn't my greatest class. I'll be honest.
Me neither.
Yeah. Math, statistics. I mean, yeah, I got through statistics in grad school, but was I the greatest at it? No, but I did
Do
enough.
I remember
I
any enough, of it? Know? No, I don't remember, but life goes on.
No. I mean, I can read a research study, but like really all you read is like the beginning and then like the discussion or whatever. For research studies anyway, so it's not like you have to know too much of the math. Anyways, but you know, it's just one of those things you learn. But anyways, so being a teacher didn't work out. And then I, at my undergrad, there was a program that was called Child and Family Development. So I knew that I liked working with people, but I didn't really know like where yet that fit in, but I knew I liked kids a lot. So that actually, I didn't know. So I'm a licensed social worker. And I learned about social work actually through my undergrad program. And I had actually no idea what social workers were. I mean, I know that I encountered them in my life, but I didn't know what they were until undergrad. And then, so in undergrad, one of my internships, actually the only internship I had, because I like, you can like have two, but I split it. I put it all together and just did, I'll explain in a second. Mm-hmm. But I did a internship in child protective services and then foster care for the state of Michigan in the county that I was in. And then I had like, it was the most amazing experience. I mean, especially for a student, I mean, I saw it all. I experienced it all. It was crazy. It was emotional. I was thrown into a lot of, situations.
That's
and I
a
had
lot
to learn
for a student.
I know, but you know, I'm the type of person that, you know, all my other, you know, classmates were doing like, I forgot where they were interning, but it was like nothing. Like it was definitely a little bit more, you know, obviously like I was like, oh, internship. I'm just going to go to the most intense, grueling one that I can go to, you know, but that's just kind of my personality. You know, I'm always just like, I want to really get my feet, you know, in it. I want to get my hands dirty. I'm not going to dip my toe in it. I'm going to, you know, dive into the ocean.
Head first. So,
yeah, no, that's my personality for sure. And so I just learned so much and I was surrounded by social workers and I'm like, these people are badass. I was like, I was so fascinated by them and just like what they did every day, you know, just helping, you know, these families and, you know, going into these homes and just like, it was completely fascinating. And they just were such hard workers and they were just such good people. And also, you know, just a side note, because I'm like such a, you know, humor-based person, people who work in child protective services and foster care have the darkest sense of humor. And it is just almost just, it's just out of the water. But I remember, you know, hearing what they said, because, you know, and we'll talk about this later, coping with humor. I mean, they showed me the masterclass and they would make these jokes and I was dying laughing. And I had this moment and I was like, oh, I found my people. I was like, yep, I found my people.
I'm one of them.
Oh yeah. I was like, oh, I'm home. So I actually, you know, from them, you know, I would have never thought I would go to grad school. Honestly, school was never really my thing, but through them, a lot of them had their master's degree. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, I should, you know, go get my, you know, master's in social work. So even then I still wasn't, you know, sold on being a therapist. It's kind of an evolution. My first internship in grad school was doing substance abuse counseling. And it was in a very, we'll say just like lower socioeconomic class in the city that I live in. And it was very interesting because that was my first experience actually doing therapy. And I had to kind of just like foster care. You know, there's a lot of experiences that I don't know if I would suggest to other people because I had to learn on the fly a lot and teach myself a lot of things. But I also, any person who wants to become a therapist, I tell them you have to be self-sufficient. And really, you know, because, you know, not like any other, you know, classic work scenarios, 98% of the time, it's just us, and, you know, client, you know, we don't have, you know, all these coworkers around us all the time. So you have to learn how to, you know, think on the fly, adapt, you know, do your mental gymnastics without anyone with you, you know? So in that job, you know, I learned a lot, and, you know, I leaned on, you know, people who are my mentors, but, you know, truly, I feel like as far as like training to be a therapist, I kind of, definitely didn't get that as much as I should have, but it taught me so much. And I did really, really enjoy it. That internship, it was very, very interesting. And then, so I dabbled in, school social work for my second one. I had some experiences just personally in my life with special education. I was always in like special ed my whole like school experience. So I had a very sweet spot for kids who were also just because of how I felt, you know, I was very stigmatized. It was something that I really actually carried with me very heavily through my academic career and even gave me a lot of trouble just like getting through grad school, just not ever feeling like I was smart enough. So I tried to do school social work. I did like it a lot, but I noticed that I was trying to give therapy in a school setting. So it really, you know, and I remember my supervisor, I'll never forget what she said this. She was like, you know, we're not supposed to be giving them therapy. We're just trying to like, you know, regulate them, de-escalate them so they can go back to class. And in my mind, I was like, well, that's just putting a band-aid on the problem. There's a lot of things that are just going on with these kids that they need way more support.
Just even the notion that they have to go back to class, like they have to get over it right now and then go back to class and take their classes and do their own thing, like do math problems while there's a lot going on in their head. Like being a teenager is tough and people, I think, don't realize that.
No, like you can't learn, you know, if you have like 3 hours of sleep, you know what I mean? And like, you know, like you didn't eat breakfast properly, you know, like, or, you know, you heard your parents yelling all night, you know, like you can't, like, there's just no way. They're trying to put so much of a learning emphasis, right? That, oh, school's so important. I'm like, if your mental health, I mean, is fucked, you're not going to learn. Like, it's just like, you're just like putting bodies in the classroom and they're not soaking up everything. And it's like, you know, that's a lot of why I like working with teens as well too, is that, you know, all the parents come to me, they're like, oh, they have school issues. They, you know, they're not doing well in school. And I'm like, okay, well, there's probably a lot going on that's, you know, inhibiting them from doing well in school. But a lot of people, unfortunately, in society focus so much on school performance and emphasize that. And that's a lot of why, you know, I mean, I like working with teens, but I didn't like doing school social work. And then, you know, after that, I honestly now that I am, you know, that whole evolution, I couldn't imagine myself doing anything else than being a therapist. It's actually just like such an amazing, amazing job. And I'm continually grateful and for what I do. And honestly, I think it's a luxury that I love what I do for a living. And I don't feel like a lot of people have that feeling about their job. So that's kind of where I'm at. And that's how I got here.
Yeah, like watching you talk, you can really tell that you have a lot of passion. And that's really great talking with another person. Like being passionate about the same subject and talking about it is one of the best feelings for me. So I really appreciate that.
Of course.
And about all this journey, like you've worked on a lot of different places. And how was your transition from social worker to therapist? What were some of the things that you liked? What were some of the things that you disliked? Or just like changes that are neutral, maybe.
Yeah. So the thing about my license, so as I told you, I'm a licensed social worker, is a part of my education actually does prepare me to be a therapist. I'm just a clinical social worker. So it's very similar, but obviously, you know, the position I took, I wasn't under, you know, I wasn't being called a social worker. I'm called a therapist, right? So then, and also it just kind of like depends, because not every field, you know, there's licensed counselors, there's licensed psychologists. And those, you know, education backgrounds, it's more like a clear path to being a therapist rather than social work. Because as a social worker, you know, as they told you, you can work in, you know, schools, you can work, you know, child protective services, foster care, nursing homes. And then, you know, that's the clinical side. But also as a social worker, you can also do what's called macro social work, which is like lobbying to change like healthcare law, organizing like statewide activist groups, advocating for, you know, things like as far as like social policy change. So So a lot of people don't know that there's like definitely there's two different types of social workers. I mean, and social workers are everywhere. Just people don't really realize it.
Yeah.
But you can also use your credential to be a licensed clinical social worker. So that's what I am. But what happened is, you know, the transition really came from my first like therapy job, I guess, because I think I told you. So when I graduated grad school, I had my first therapy job, which was in an agency. And now I'm in private practice, which is a little different as far as that goes. So I'll tell you just like, you know, a little bit more about that. My first job was in a, like primarily Medicaid population. It was outpatient medication assisted agency. So they had a lot of different, like, you know, words, like a lot of different, you know, branches.
Can you explain a little about what is the Medicaid population?
Yeah. So Medicaid population is a lower socioeconomic class that requires a little bit more of government assistance. Especially when it comes to insurance. So like they like are required, like they more like require a lot of more resources and services to kind of just kind of be an adaptable, you know, functional part of the society. So a Medicaid population as well is like in, unfortunately, a lot of the time is like where people like end up kind of in child protective services, but because they have a lot of cards, unfortunately, stacked against them, whether it's housing, whether it's jobs, whether it's just childcare, a lot of like the basic needs, you know, that others, you know, who are in higher socioeconomic classes, you know, they struggle to get those on a consistent basis rather than someone who isn't. So working with them, it was more like, okay, these people obviously have the same needs as someone, you know, who has, you know, in the higher socioeconomic class, you know, they need therapy, they need medication, they need services. So there's agencies, you know, like the one I worked at that really, you know, emphasize that, okay, we will take Medicaid, and that's like the insurance that, clients that people who are, you know, who qualify for that, like they have a hard time actually getting the same care or, you know, quality of care than someone who would, as we call it in the States, private insurance. So people who are in a higher socioeconomic class. So technically, you know, private insurance would pay more. So you would get more. Medicaid, you know, they pay less. So unfortunately, sometimes they do get less. But in that, in the environment that I was with, you know, we really strive to give all the same sort resources and care when working in that population. So as I said, there was outpatient therapy as well as medication assisted. And we worked very closely with the psychiatrists, coordination of care for a lot of our clients. And a big part of our agency was that if they were going to get medication, that it was required that they see a therapist once a month. Mm-hmm. Which was really, really cool. And I feel like that was important. Only thing on that is I did love that job. It was really, really valuable experience. I have treated a lot of the basic diagnoses, you know, even like, you know, OCD. I've seen a lot of schizophrenia, borderline personality. I've seen, you know, worked with a lot of individuals who have a bipolar diagnosis.
The big ones.
Yeah, like the big ones that a lot of people actually, you know, don't like have the, you know, like opportunity to treat. Yeah. So I got a lot of experience with that. I worked with a very wide range of ages. Like my youngest client at one point was 4. My oldest was about 60. It was just all over the map.
And wide it was range.
It was a wide range, but, and then like the presenting problem that these clients had were, it's a lot more intense than, you know, I would say like for the client, you know, clients of different populations. So there was a lot going on there. So as I kind of told you, I'm the type of person that really likes to, you know, get my hands dirty, dive in deep, you know, I make a joke that I, you know, really enjoyed not treating white people problems. Because I like really did feel like I was making a difference with these people who really, really needed it. But the thing, unfortunately, about that is it was so draining. It was
I can't imagine.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, that this is something like systematically that is just needs to change, that I was paid really poorly. I had to see a lot of clients. So really, you know, stretching my just kind of like my sanity to like see so many clients in a week just to get paid well, and the intensity of their, you know, their problems, and you know, the intensity of the diagnoses. Also, I was a baby therapist trying to do all this, you know, like they talk about imposter syndrome all the time. Like I had imposter syndrome like on steroids a lot of the time, but it, as I said, it was very, very good experience, and it was very, very valuable. And in as a social worker, you need to require to get a full license. So I was on a limited license. So they call it an LLMSW. You have to get 4,000 hours of supervision. So, you know, weekly meetings with someone who is fully licensed to discuss cases and overlook, you know, what you're doing. And then I had to pass a board exam. So after I finished that, so it was about roughly 2 years after I originally started that job, that's when, so I got my full license in the end of July of 2021. Mm-hmm. So then immediately I was ready to jump ship. So then now I'm in private practice. So private practice is with me is I work in one single office, but I have a lot of coworkers who are psychologists, psychiatrists, licensed counselors. And then me and my other coworker are the only social workers. So I work in a private practice, but it's like a group of other people.
Like in the same building, the same space as you?
Yep, the same space. Yep. And then we, you know, we have office manager, biller, front desk and stuff. So it, like when you think of private practice, a lot of the time people think, oh, it's just you working on your own, like you have your own thing. But a lot of private practices are actually group practices.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, I think that's the best way to start off, just so you can have that support in the beginning. And also, you know, there's a lot of business side to being a therapist that that's another thing grad school does not prepare you for.
Yeah. I mean, and we should have a course.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And so this kind of brings me, you know, into this more like, so, you know, the difference is as well, you know, I like private practice. I get better pay. I get paid finally for what I deserve. And as a, especially as a social worker, you're unfortunately taught that, you know, you should just get used to, you know, getting paid less than you deserve.
Yeah. Like working for the good of your heart out of the goodness of your will. Like, it's not like that. You have to, therapists and social workers still have to be paid what they deserve. Like it's work and as draining or more draining than any other.
Yeah. I mean, we are doctors of the mind. We're practitioners.
I like how you put that. Doctors of the mind.
Well, really, though, I mean, like, we're opening up people and really understanding, you know, like the motivations, like the cognitive factors that go into why people make the choices they do and why they feel the way they feel. And that's does a lot of exploring. And that's like, you know, it's internal messy work, not like surgery. Right. Yeah. It's just really shitty that, you know, we're not, you know, we're kind of like shunned for, you know, wanting to be paid more. But it's like, when I was in Medicaid, I was like, you try doing what I did and then tell me that I should settle for what I was being paid. Like, tell me that right in my eye.
Yeah.
And they would leave crying the first day if they tried to do what I was doing. I feel that. You know, so that's, but private practice is just, it's how I've liked it a lot is I have more like motivated clients. Unfortunately, with a program like having medication assisted, being required to see a therapist once a month, is they're just there for the meds a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of just like going through the motions, like seeing me once a month. I mean, there are some people that, you know, like were able to be like, oh, this could actually be really helpful. But a lot of times they were just really some unmotivated clients. So now like I'm seeing clients and they're like, I want to be here. I want to do the work.
Oh, it's great to work with someone else that is motivated.
Oh my gosh. And it just makes the teamwork even more exciting.
Yeah.
And just more rewarding. And then I have a lot more, a better like support as far as my staff. I'm actually the youngest one in my private practice by quite a bit. It's a lot of like very like older, like 40s, 50s, practitioners. So, you know, it's like, it's like an honor that they were like, we're going to take the newbie.
Yeah. So, a lot of experience to draw from. So that must be good.
Exactly. And with Medicaid, unfortunately there was a lot of turnover. People didn't really last there very long. And then at my new practice, I mean, people have been there for like, I think like some people I work with have been there for like a decade. So, I mean, that already shows a lot. So I'm like way more supported. I get to like draw from a lot of experience too, which is very, very cool. But also kind of what I was going into before with private practice that they don't teach you is that, you know, we're contract workers. We don't get insurance. I don't know how it works, you know, in your country, but in the States, like we don't get insurance. We're contract workers. We're, you know, just paid for services.
Yeah. Right? Here it works the same.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of people don't really realize that going into it, that plays different with taxes, is different as far as just like how you go about like budgeting, and you have to get your own insurance, and you have to be very responsible for tracking and auditing your own money, mm-hmm. which, as I told you, I'm allergic to numbers. I did not know what I was getting myself into for this part. But I'm learning. I also recently actually technically became a business owner of myself.
I have an
LLC now.
Congratulations. My God.
But that's another thing that actually is very important for even when you're working in a group of people to have your own business, technically, and like have, you know, having like tax write-offs and stuff like that, because you're the business, but everything that you do is, as I said, you know, as a therapist, it's 98% yourself. So you really have to be responsible for a lot of things that go into your business. The difference between, you know, being a therapist and I went down a wormhole, but I feel like I answered your question.
No, that's great. And with a private practice, I feel like there's a lot that you just don't know and you have to like just keep learning, like marketing, for example. How do you market yourself as a therapist? Where do you go? Where do you subscribe to? Where do clients find you? It's all so new and nobody tells you in grad school. Nobody tells you. You just have to find out. You have to talk to your peers. And this, like the talking and disconnecting, is a work in itself. So it's kind of exhausting.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You have to really like heavily rely on having a, you know, network of other professionals. That's also why I like Instagram, the community, because I've been able to meet a lot of other professionals and learn from them and talk to them. And, you know, Dr. Funny, sometimes I text her about stuff like, you know, we'll chat about like cases or like we'll chat about, I mean, because we're practitioners, HIPAA is HIPAA, right? So we can still like case consult. I mean, her and I probably just call it chatting, but anyway, but professionally, you know, we get to do like have all of that, but it's really important because they don't teach you this. And in like a big part, you know, speaking of marketing questions, I don't like something that I learned is in the States, we have a website called Psychology Today.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah.
I literally just had to sign up for this site and I have gotten so many referrals on it.
Oh, that's like, good, right?
Oh, it's amazing. I got so many referrals. I got more referrals from that site and then and grabbing some old clients from my other job than I did in-house referrals from my practice. And yeah, it's crazy. It is. And it's like only like $30 a month and stuff.
So and it pays off.
Yeah. I had to literally start turning people away and say that I had a wait list. That's how many I was getting.
That's fancy. I have a wait list. I want to get to that point one day, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, but I wanted to ask you like more on a personal note from all you've told me, all these different settings, what were some of the experiences that stuck to you the most? Of course, being mindful about confidentiality, about people's identities, but I don't know if you have anything in mind.
So the ones like pretty much that like impacted me the most or just were, profound. Wow. I'll kind of like start little. So in foster care, one of my first cases that I worked on was a murder case. And it was a murder case of a young child.
As a baby therapist, that must have been terrifying.
Yeah. Well, this was when I was an intern too. This is when I was like 20 years old, first internship.
You're working on. Oh my God. I don't know what I would do.
This is what I'm telling you that this is the type of shit that like I've, you know, been able to experience as like a, you know, even being as young as I am. I mean, I've been in the trenches. So one of the first cases was a murder case of a young child from one of their parents. And I worked with the child's three brothers who were all under the ages of 7. And that experience was just breathtaking to see the impacts of trauma on young children and how much they had to grow up at such a young age and then deal with the fact that their sibling was murdered by one of their parents. And they knew that. Yeah, it was insane. And these kids were not able to be kids. And there was one time that it was unfortunately one of the last times I actually saw them because something happened just within like caseworkers. I don't know, it was some weird thing, but I was able to take them to just like a soccer field. The siblings actually didn't all have the same parent. So we were doing like a sibling visit and these kids, like I was just like, I grabbed like a soccer ball. It was like kind of raining, but we like ran around, we were kicking the soccer ball. And that was the first time that I saw these kids actually act like kids, smiling, laughing, just enjoying themselves, super carefree. Like, I mean, these kids just like, they would used to swear, they used to try to front, they were very aggressive. You know what I mean? Like acted like they were adults. And this moment in time, they just were able to be kids. And the fact that I was able to give them that, I mean, that was really the catalyst of me being like, oh, this is what I want to do. Yeah. I want to help people. I want to help people. And even if it's just giving them 20 minutes of an escape or just support, you know, that just a safe space. Like, I mean, it was so powerful. I wrote my grad school paper on that actually. And I still like tear up thinking about it. And every once in a while, I wonder where those kids are to this day. Yeah, that one was a really, really impactful one. And I've had a lot of very interesting clients over the few years that I've worked. I think, you know, there's been just cases where I have just seen people who have like movie-like traumas, like pure, like you look at them and you're like, how are you still standing with everything that you have gone through? Like,
you must learn so much about resilience when you talk to these people.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I look at them and I'm like, you went through almost a horror movie. And just to see those people grow and heal and just, I mean, just the human ability to heal and grow and be resilient, clear, like every day continues to take my breath away. It's so profound. And just these people that, you know, don't have support in their life, and me being in the chair and just listening to them, I mean, it's crazy that sometimes I'm like, oh, I'm just doing the bare minimum, but it's not, because these people haven't been heard or listened to, or just giving like just compassion to just be themselves, to feel, to be, you know, just a human without judgment or shame or abuse or neglect. It's just, it's very powerful. And I have insane humility sometimes when people tell me like, oh, it's so amazing you do what you do. And I'm like, oh, it's just, you know, I just get up and I do it. Like, it's just another day at work. But truly, I mean, what I get to do on a daily basis is just so profound, and being able to just see people, you know, like help people, you know, able to, you know, report their sexual assault, you know, see people being able to lift themselves out of addiction, you know, seeing people being able to leave toxic abusive relationships, or, you know, being able to, you know, stand up to their parents and set boundaries, and, you know, people who, you know, didn't believe they could do certain things, or, you know, even, you know, who are just completely been able to transform their lives and, you know, go to school when they, you know, barely, you know, they didn't even have like a GED to begin with. It's just, I mean, people are truly incredible. And you know, people just tend to forget that, you know, you can do anything you put your mind to. Is it going to be hard? Yes. Is there going to be pain? Yes. It's going to be uncomfortable? Sure. But people really can do whatever, you know, they want to, if they have the right motivation, and people can just blossom. And it is just incredible to be, I just feel like I'm the spectator, you know what I mean? I'm just like watching this, and it's cool. Cool. So, I mean, you go. Sorry.
No, I was thinking, how can you not keep doing what you're doing after you go through a case like that, after you have someone like that? I know that for me, this really reminded me of a girl. It wasn't really psychotherapy. I just had sessions with her. I referred her out because I wasn't really a therapist yet. I know I'm not, but I didn't like act as a therapist back then. And then she had two children. She was 20 years old. She already had two children. She was taking care of her husband's other little girl that was from another marriage. Her husband was in prison. Like, she had to take care of her mom and her grandma, and they were both sick, and she had to take care of everything. And even then, she used to tell me, oh, I wanna go after my high school diploma. Can you help me? Where can I go to get that diploma? How can I improve? And I would just, I don't know if I would have been in her situation. I honestly don't know what I would have done, but her resilience, it really touched me. And I remember that on my last day at this institution I used to work for, she gave me like a little rose and a teddy bear, and I cried so much. This experience is really, really sick with us. And this is something I will remember. It was last year, but I'm sure I will remember like 4 years to come. I'm sure of it.
Yeah. Oh, that story I told you, I mean, that was in 2015, I want to say. Yeah, that happened in 2015. And I mean, I have like a clear Snapchat. I mean, snapshot of what that looked like. And I still just feel it to my core. And I just truly will, yeah, just like that, you know, I will never, ever forget that client. And I think a lot of people don't really realize, you know, yes, we have so much impact on our clients, but they have so much impact on us.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like people really, I feel like I grow with them growing, you know, I feel like, you know, they, you know, influence so much of how I see the world and, you know, how even I see myself and, you know, like motivate me. Sometimes my clients are doing these badass things and I'm like, man, like you're making me feel like I'm not doing enough. Like, you know what I mean? Like even, you know, as you said, you're like, man, I can't imagine what it would have been like in her situation. And I'm like, man, you're making me look lazy over here. You guys are hustling.
Exactly. You know,
that's just what's so cool about it.
Yeah, you know that TikTok audio, I want to be like you. Sometimes I feel like that with my clients.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And
I don't know if you're comfortable talking a little bit about it, but how is your own relationship with therapy and with your mental health? Because I feel like it's important for therapists to also disclose about this.
Oh yeah. So I really value and obviously no one heard this before, but I was joking around how I literally just came back from therapy, my own therapy before we did this. And I value having my own therapist and very much like I've had my own childhood adult traumas. I struggle with mental health myself. It's very interesting being a therapist and being tossed around diagnoses for yourself. But I would say mostly like my biggest Achilles heel is I really do struggle with depression and I have my own PTSD. So for me, therapy has been just so vital for my healing because if I wasn't actively healing myself, I would be no good to any of my clients. And there was a time in the beginning of my career where I still hadn't yet gotten to that point of active healing that it really, you know, talk about burnout or imposter syndrome. It really shattered me in the beginning. And I mean, if I hadn't found the therapist that I have now, I would not have been able to work for that much longer. So, I mean, I really credit it for my ability to become continually successful in this career. It is just so important as a therapist to have your own healing and have your own safe space that you give to others. And remember that you're human with feelings, experiences, your own, you know, for lack of a better word, baggage. Yeah. And, you know, you deserve the same things that, you know, you give others. And I mean, for me, it has just been, man, like I wouldn't know where I'd be without it. Yeah. I mean, I've had the same therapist for almost 2.5 years. And I mean, he is just, oh, he's like my best friend. I'm just so grateful. And also it's cool too, when you're a therapist to also have someone, you know, cause he's a lot older than me, just looking them at them as a mentor too. You know, like I'm a therapist, you're a therapist, you get it. You know, I get it kind of thing. So it's definitely been such a value, especially because I've gone through, you know, my own trials and tribulations. And I think the reason, you know, my struggles that I have had, I wouldn't, you know, take back, you know, for anything in the world. Mm-hmm. I think it's what makes me a better therapist because my empathy, you know, really is very, very deep. And for all my clients because of what I have gone through. And I'm just happy that, you know, my pain has been able to serve a purpose. But also, you know, that pain needs to be tended to. Yeah. So it can have a higher purpose. So yes, everyone who wants to be a therapist, go to therapy.
Yeah.
Please go to therapy.
That's really essential.
really is. It scares me when there's people that I unfortunately have known that had never been to therapy going into their career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of shady. I know. But I just want to thank you for sharing, because I know it takes courage. I struggle with anxiety for a while, like since I was a kid and some other stuff. And I do get when you talk about your therapist. I recently switched therapists. I've been with mine for, I don't know, 6 months maybe. And then she disclosed to me her issues with anxiety, her struggles with anxiety. And it made me feel so validated that someone I looked up to, someone that I want to be in the position, like the same position as her. And she was telling me about how she struggled with anxiety and how she's going through it. Like, it's not something that she even said, okay, it's done. Like, I went through with it, but now it's all good. No, she told me that she still struggled with it. And it was so important to me to let me know that, okay, I can be a successful therapist and I can also have anxiety and deal with it. So it's really important, that role that the therapist plays.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's a really good point too, because there's a lot of, you know, schools of thought when it comes to therapeutic self-disclosure, right? And obviously that's a fine balance too, but you know, there's times that I don't like you, in, you know, like the white coat syndrome, you know, how like people like look at you like a doctor, you're like, like there's this whole entity, they're just like this big deal, you know, like, oh, they're all knowing, you know, they're all together or whatever. And it's just like that intimidation. And you know, I even had a client today that was like, oh, I hope you're not judging me. And I looked at them and I was like, I want you to think about that question again. And she's like, she like paused and I said, what's my job here? And she's like, not to judge me.
Good refrain.
I know. But it was so sad because she was so worried that I was going to judge her. But I was like, oh, honey, sweetie, no. I was like, I've probably done worse. But no, it's definitely, there's a school of thought when it comes to, you know, therapeutic self-disclosure. And definitely now there's more of a movement with being authentic as a therapist and leaning away from that. And that's a huge like point of intention when it comes to my practice, is just being very authentically me. Like us, the conversation we're having right now, my personality, it really isn't too far off to how I, you know, talk and act with clients. I am me, you know. I swear I'll make little, you know, tiny jokes here and there, but because like sometimes we just need to laugh, right? Yeah. But it's just so important. And then there's been times that, you know, I've had clients that I've disclosed, like even, you know, that I understand what it's like to be on medication and the stigma. Like, I'm like, I'm on meds. I'm like, I got my crazy pills, but I mean, they keep me safe and I'm here because of that. You know, but it, you know, I've shared that before. You know, there's been clients that, you know, I've experienced sexual assault. I've disclosed that to a client before, a few clients when I felt like it was necessary. And like, just like they're at, kind of as you're saying, you know, it just kind of like reiterated that therapists kind of like don't really realize the power of self-disclosure sometimes when people just feel so isolated and alone and, you know, so broken and no one else is like me, you know, that it's valuable to kind of break that, you know, I think it's like the third wall, fourth wall or whatever the term is, to like take that veil off and be like, no, I'm a human too. Like, you know, I get it. It's hard. I mean, and definitely not to act like, you know, having a God complex or, oh, I'm all fixed. I got all the answers. And I'm like, no, I'm like, I got, you know, I've got some things from my textbook that I'll peddle to you, you know, that I know, but, you know, I'm still working on it too. Like, we're in this together in some sense. But yeah, it definitely, being authentic as a therapist and being approachable and, you know, owning the fact that, you know, you're not perfect is also really, really important, because clients respond to that. Yeah. And they see that and they need that, you know, they already have enough people in their life who are trying to act a certain way or all authoritarian, you know, or, you know, holier than thou. Like, you don't need to be another person like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for self-disclosing here. I feel like one of your clients hearing you and feeling validated.
You're so sweet.
But regarding your clients, changing a little bit the subject, but not too much. How do you know that therapy is working for them? Do you feel like it's something you can notice or they tell you?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I think it's, you know, in the beginning is, I obviously rapport is so important, and the first step to any like successful client progress is feeling that rapport, you know, getting your client to, you know, like start to feel comfortable with you and see that you understand them and that you're trying to help them, and that, you know, you have these and you're starting to give them these tools and saying, hey, you know, here's some insight. This is going to help give you some perspective. You know, I say to my clients, you know, the first step is self-awareness. And then after self-awareness is identifying behavioral patterns. And then the third step is then catching yourself in the pattern and doing something different. So what, you know, I noticed kind of in that framework is when I start to see my clients, you know, like verbalizing more self-awareness of what's going on, you know, and what are the things that, you know, experience them, whether they're anxiety triggers, whether they're, you know, things that, you know, they notice set their panic attacks off, or, you know, things that they notice that happen, you know, that make them feel like depressed, or things that they're doing, you know, if they're like, you know, if they're going out and, you know, getting blackout every weekend and they're like, man, you know, I'm feeling like something's kind of happening here because I keep getting depressed. You know, when they start kind of recognizing things after, you know, a little bit after, you know, we've kind of like started to talk about it, but they're starting to come to those own, you know, conclusions on their own, that self-awareness. And then you can see that, okay, they see what they want to change, right? The, as far as their behavior. And right now I'm talking very CBT, if you can kind of follow.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then, you know, they're starting to say, okay, these are the behaviors that, you know, that are keep happening. Like I talk a lot about the difference between, you know, our being conscious and being subconscious, right? We don't being in our subconscious. It's like our, you know, very much like our auto drive. We're doing a lot of these things without realizing it. So when we have that self-awareness, right, but we know the behaviors, it's like, okay, you start seeing the clients intentionally bridging the conscious things they want to work on with the, you know, things they're fighting against with their subconscious, and they're having that trial and error. And another thing as well is you can just tell that they're trying to use their coping mechanisms. They're really trying and they want to. And you know, even if they say like, I'll like maybe give them a suggestion of like journaling, and they're like, well, I didn't journal this week, but I know I should journal.
Yeah, I really appreciate the honesty. I really do. When clients tell me, okay, I didn't do that, but I'll try next time.
I love that. And like that they're very honest about that. And like they like definitely over time, you can see like the candor, you know, and also a big part of seeing progress is vulnerability in session. When clients are able to cry in session, I always find that to be a very big breakthrough in really showing about how that the therapeutic relationship is really working, because they're feeling safe in that space to be able to just let it happen. And one of my, in a sadistic way, therapists like want their clients to cry just because we want them to grieve. We want them to feel their feelings. A lot of people, you know, stigmatized just feeling their feelings, just letting it out, because, you know, we become like these, you know, powder keg, you know, repressed people holding on, you know, God forbid you show that you're hurt, you know, God forbid people see you're struggling, and it just gets like so condensed. And then it's like a volcano, right? But, you know, people need to just feel their emotions. It's a part of the human experience. So when they're able to bring that to session, I mean, that's a point of progress. That's really, really huge. I think another thing is I'm a trauma-informed therapist. I work a lot with trauma. So when I notice my clients are able to work, consistently use their coping skills, and then they start to disclose to me traumas that they hadn't shared with anyone before, or they say that, hey, I know that there's things in my life that are still hurting me that I'm still like feeling shame about. And I want to process this. You know, I want to figure out why the way, you know, I am or why these things happened. That's another big point too. I mean, man, there's so many things I could say about how you can tell a client is progressing. It's definitely, and it's not, you know, like a step-by-step, you see little bits of pieces, you know, each session. Definitely. I noticed too, I love my weekly clients because those are the people that you can see the progression a lot faster, when they're motivated. But you know, most of the time it is a very tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of progression that you'll see, but you know, any step is a step forward, no matter what that looks like. Even if the client's like, I showered 3 times this week. And I'm like, fuck yeah, that's one more than last week. Let's go.
Exactly. Appreciate the little things, because people are not going to just wake up overnight and be, okay, I'm cured. No more depressive episodes, no more anxiety. I'm all okay. You have to really appreciate this. So one thing is like, okay, so I was really anxious, but I did what you told me. I don't know. I grabbed a cup of tea and I just focused on the tea and focused on feeling it on my tongue and stuff like that. And it worked. Like, I was still anxious, but I did, I don't know, I went into the job interview or I did the meeting. So you really have to appreciate the little things.
Oh my gosh. And then another thing is, I love when clients are like, that one thing you said to me stuck with me. And it's very interesting to see the little nuggets that you share with clients and that you hear that they're like, oh, that's what stuck to me. Oh, that's what stuck to me. One that I really like. So I had a client who was like really struggling with school. You know, it was a very like weighing on their self-esteem, you know, they felt pressured that they had to, but they were enjoying it or whatever. And, but it was like more something that they were being pushed on by their parents. And there was one time that I was like to them, I was like, you know, if school makes you so miserable during college, I was like, you don't have to go. Like, why do it? You know? And the client recently told me, they were like, man, when you told me I didn't have to go to school, like that was like a really interesting challenge. And he's like, that really stuck with me that you kind of like just said that you don't need to go to school. And that's one of those things. I mean, for me, when I was in session, I was just letting him know. I was like, you don't have to go to school. I was like, I didn't really think of how impactful, you know, that statement would have been. And that's really cool too. I love those types of moments.
Oh, that's amazing. It's going to stick with you and it's going to stick for him for a long time. I'm sure. Yeah. I love those moments. And yeah, I really, I had a lot more questions for you and I still want to keep talking. I want to ask you for a second episode someday, but unfortunately we have to start wrapping up.
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it. And I'm glad that we were able to, I'm honored to be your second guest and to have this time. And I had a lot of fun. And I hope, you know, that anyone who's listening to this can feel a little bit more validated, a little bit more heard, a little bit more understood when it comes to the mental health community, comes to reaching out to therapy. Anyone who wants to be a therapist, wants to get a therapist, who is a therapist, you know, I just hope that, you know, the conversation today, you know, someone can get a little bit of a, you know, shine of validation and love and understanding. So
I hope so too. And as the last question, do you have someone in mind that you can indicate to be our next guest or to be on the show?
Yeah. So I have to go to bat for my guys from Millennial Health Channel, Eddie and Jason. I was on their podcast. I mean, they are really cool, really interesting guys, have a lot of interesting experiences, a lot of wisdom, and they're really fun. I also like the Cranky Therapist, that's her handle. I can't pronounce her last name, but her name's Jess, but she's got a lot of really interesting content out there as well. And I've connected with her a few times and I think she would be a cool guest as well.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to write it down later and hopefully they'll accept to be on our podcast, but thank you so much, Lynn. Really, really, it was amazing. Thank you.
For more laughs and relatable content, don't forget to check out Celine's page on Instagram @WaitI'mTheTherapist.
Thank you so much, listener, for coming along with us on this podcast.
Have any feedback, suggestions, or want to be on the podcast? Write us at podcast@psychedup.show. If you want show notes or resources about mental health, you can find more at psychedup.show.
Looking for memes? Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at Your Therapy Memes. Until next time, listener,